From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Birock, and this is Arizona Spotlight. The Arizona primary elections were held this week. We'll have a recap of some of the races. Soo-Yun Lee will have a feature story on a local group that recycles bicycles to promote education and art. Bill Mortimer takes us inside the historic Old Pueblo trolley. And we'll talk with the creators of a new border exhibit at the Scottsdale Museum of Contemporary Art. Those stories and more are coming up, but first. Primary elections were held all around our state this week. On Tuesday, Arizona voters decided some very high-profile races, including the Republican and Democratic primary elections for the U.S. Congressional District 8 seat being vacated by Representative Jim Colby. Voters also made their decision in the primary for governor. There were some upsets and close races on election night, including the much-talked-about primary in the CD 8 race. Amid cheers from supporters at the Viscount Hotel in Tucson, Democrat Gabrielle Giffords beat out five other Democrats in her bid to win the Democratic nomination. She captured 54% of the vote. As she looks forward to the next phase of the campaign, Giffords says it's time for change in Washington.
When you think about what's happening in Washington, the fact that we've had a failure to secure the borders, a failure to balance the budget, a failure to provide good jobs and economic opportunities, health care, I think that America is really going to make a big change this fall.
Giffords beat out her closest competitor, former newscaster Patty Weiss, who captured 31% of the vote. A very gracious Weiss showed up at the celebration to congratulate Giffords and to give her her support, telling the crowd the Democratic Party must stand together.
This is a great opportunity for the Democrats. We've been waiting for 22 years to get this seat back, and so all of us as Democrats need to work hard to make sure that happens.
Meanwhile, on the other side of town and the political spectrum, the scene was a little different, with Republican Randy Graff holding only a slight lead most of the night over his closest competitor, Steve Huffman. His supporters gathered at the Doubletree Inn to share in his assumed victory over Huffman. The official results aren't certified until a few days following the election. By the end of the night, Graff captured 43% of the vote and Huffman 37%.
I'm proud of the campaign we ran. We stayed on the issues. Even though one camp decided to go negative, I think the voters responded to the fact that we kept it on the issues. And like I said, I'm certainly proud of that.
Like Giffords, Graff says he's looking forward to the next 2 months.
It will be sort of the classic Republican-Democrat matchup. And we are bringing a Republican message that probably hasn't been heard here from Southern Arizona in a while. One back to more a platform, a conservative message, talking about controlling spending, securing this border, national defense. And I'm confident that that message will play very well over the next 8 weeks.
Randy Graff says he's hoping to gain the support of his fellow Republican Steve Huffman, who hasn't officially conceded, but he won't get the support of the man he hopes to replace. On Wednesday, Jim Colby congratulated Graff on his victory in the primary, but announced that because there are such profound and fundamental differences between them on several key issues, that he can't endorse Graff for the general election. Appearing on Arizona Illustrated on KUAT Channel 6 just days prior to the primary, Colby said he was confident that Steve Huffman would be the Republican nominee. And recently during the campaign, the National Republican Congressional Committee surprised the other Republican candidates when they publicly endorsed Steve Huffman with a $122,000 television ad. Colby says it wasn't that unusual for the NRCC to endorse Huffman, being that they too felt Huffman would be the best nominee.
It's not unknown. They have intervened in primary elections before, but it's rare. They don't do it very often. But my guess is they looked at polling data and came to the same conclusion that I did months ago, and that is that the only one really that has a chance of winning in November is Steve Huffman.
Since Huffman's defeat on Tuesday night, the NRCC has decided to throw their support behind Randy Graff.
I am pleased to accept the Republican Party's nomination for governor of the great state.
In other races around the state, Len Munsell defeated Republican Party activist Don Goldwater and two others in the primary race for the GOP nomination for governor. Munsell will face Democratic Governor Janet Napolitano and Libertarian candidate Barry Hess in November. Napolitano was unopposed in the primary. Republican incumbent Tony Helen was defeated by Al Melvin in the state Senate District 26 race. Melvin will face Democrat Charlene Pesquera in November. And after a heated race between Democrats for a seat in the Arizona Senate in District 28, incumbent Paula Aboud defeated Ted Downing. Aboud captured 54% of the vote, while Downing got 46%. Downing gave up his seat in the Arizona House of Representatives to run for the Senate seat. Up next on Arizona Spotlight, Sue Yun Lee has a feature story on a local organization that recycles bicycles to promote education and art. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Here in Tucson, riding a bicycle is a very common form of transportation. You see bikers all around town traveling to school or work. But a local organization is doing something a little bit different with bicycles. It's called Bikus, and the nonprofit community co-op is dedicated to promoting and recycling bicycles. Sue Yun Lee has more.
Yeah, it's nice. We've been camping the last couple nights.
We get some rain, too.
Yeah, that was nice.
An Alaskan family of four is touring the Southwest. Before their next stop, the baby's stroller broke.
And we're heading down to Mexico, and so we needed a place that we could just quick fix the bike without, you know, leaving it off, or quick fix the stroller.
Someone recommended they go to a place in the warehouse district.
Like, I bet if you were just to switch out your cable, and if that cable starts to, like, rust, then you've got rust. This is grinding.
They'll see what's wrong, you know, and they'll say, hey, you just go ahead and fix it yourself. Because that way, because we use this thing all the time, and if it breaks down, you don't have shops like this anywhere. So they show you how to do it, and then you can just fix it on your own. It's pretty easy.
This family is among the 5,000 people who visit Bikus every year.
Bikus is an acronym which stands for Bicycle Inter-Community Action and Salvage, and we are a nonprofit bicycle educational center. So we are not a bike shop. We will not fix your bicycle for you. We are here to help you fix your bicycle. And so we do that in various different ways. We have classes every day of the week. Some are geared towards younger students. Some are geared towards older students. We have classes strictly for females. And then we have classes that are even for bike mechanics.
Ignacio Rivera de Rosales, administrator of Bikus, says the bike co-op started in 1989 to help the homeless with their transportation.
And right away, as soon as they started doing that, they realized, wow, what an incredible educational opportunity this is, and not just for this homeless population, but for the whole strata of, you know, of the Tucson community. And so then the place really opened up to everybody, and the focus in a way shifted to kids and teaching kids how to work on the bicycle and getting them bikes.
Every inch of this basement shop is filled with used bicycles and bicycle parts. Recycling and education about recycling are a big part of Bikus' mission.
At least 4,000 bicycles a year from the waste stream. And those bicycles are refurbished in different ways. We might have them for sale as refurbished bikes. We might have them as rental bikes. They might be part of our classes, and so these bikes will be used as hands-on educational tools for people to get their hands on to learn how to use these things. Or they might be taken down and parts might be used for art. We have an art auction every year, which is an absolute blast.
Tucson has been cited as one of the top 10 bicycle towns. The Rosales gives us some safety tips for the road.
Ride on the right-hand side of the road. Don't hug the curb. Ride in straight lines. Be very predictable. Signal before you're going to turn and make those signals very deliberate. And follow the street signs. Don't honk at a cyclist if you're a car driver. Oftentimes, car drivers think that honking will notify the cyclist that you're coming along. In fact, it often just really scares the cyclist, and they don't understand why that they're being honked at. Another thing, in the city of Tucson, and actually in the county, the law is that every car should give a bicyclist 3 feet of space, but cyclists ask for 5. You'll see those stickers that we put out that say, give a cyclist 5 feet. 3 feet is definitely nice. If you see a cyclist, don't do anything different. Don't make any crazy maneuvers. Just continue on your same line and just treat that cyclist as though they were another car. Mark was actually one of my students, and this is his class bike that he's getting to build. So we have I see at least 40 different students a week.
Teaching is one gratifying factor of his job, but De Rosales has another also.
The most gratifying thing down here is, well, not, one of them is the kids. It's the kids that come down here all the time, and it's forming these relationships with these kids. They really take to you, you know? This is Javier, and this is CJ, and we're taking off a three-piece crank right now. I think it's the first time they've ever done it, and so they're just getting through step one.
It feels good. After we finish building our bikes, we get to go ride it.
We do programs, classes, and when you're done with your bike, sometimes you can go riding with the people at work here, riding around. Stuff like that.
So I want you to get your hands together like this and close them like scissors. If this place weren't here, I would never have the opportunity of making that relationship.
If it wasn't for this program, I'd probably be, sitting at home playing video games or something.
Yes, all right, now that's good. You see it wiggling around, go ahead and pull it right off. Look at that. Ow! Yes!
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Suyan Lee.
Bikus is located at 44 West 6th Street on the northern corner of 6th and 9th Avenue. For more information, log on to bikus.org. Up next on Arizona Spotlight, we'll talk to the creators of a new border project going on display at the Scottsdale Museum of Contemporary Art this weekend. You're listening to Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. A new exhibit will be on display in Scottsdale through the beginning of next year, examining the volatile issue of immigration from two different perspectives: migrants trying to cross into the United States illegally, and the Minutemen who are trying to help Border Patrol stop them. It's called the Border Film Project, El Proyecto Fronterizo Fotográfico. The exhibit creators Rudy Adler, Victoria Criado, and Brett Honeycutt distributed thousands of disposable cameras to migrants and Minutemen along the border, and the amateur photographers took pictures of their daily lives and returned them via mail. Joining me now are Rudy Adler and Brett Honeycutt. They join me by telephone from the Scottsdale Museum of Contemporary Art. Rudy, Brett, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, first tell me, who came up with the idea for the project?
Actually, all three of us came up with the idea. We set out to do a project that would simplify what is a very complicated and contentious issue in the state of Arizona. And we began the project with the aspiration of creating something together. And we found the U.S.-Mexico border to be an interesting story, so we went out there. And we spent about 3 or 4 weeks educating ourselves, interviewing people, politicians, activists, migrants, Minutemen. And we came to really understand what was happening through our own personal experience. And after that time, we had the idea. We thought this was a great way to simplify and humanize the issue.
And how did you go about distributing the cameras along the border?
The cameras were distributed in a pre-stamped self-addressed envelope. So specifically with the migrants, we put in a disposable camera, instructions on basic photography instructions, and we included a Walmart gift card with a zero balance. And the way it worked was when the migrants made it into the United States, if they made it into the United States, they would just have to put the camera package in a U.S. mailbox and it would arrive to us in Arizona. They held on to the Walmart gift card, and we had a numbering system so we knew which card went in which package. So when we received the package in Arizona, we looked up which gift card the migrant was holding, and we put a small cash donation on each card.
And how many of those cameras did you get back?
We distributed about 500 to the migrants, and we got back about 15% of those. We knew it was going to be a numbers game. And with the Minutemen, we distributed quite a bit less, about 100, and we got about 40% back from them. It's much easier for them to participate in this project than it was for the migrants.
And what was their initial reaction when you approached them with the cameras and you told them about your project and what you were hoping to achieve by it? How did they respond to that?
You know, surprisingly, a lot of migrants were really interested in what we were trying to do. And those that took some of the best photographs that came back were the ones that I think we made personal connections with, that really enjoyed the idea and wanted to show Americans the journey that they have to go through to get into this country.
Brett, what was it specifically about the illegal immigration issue that really drove you to do this project? It is definitely an issue of contention here in southern Arizona, but what was it specifically that you wanted to say, that you wanted to achieve with the project?
Well, I think there are a few things that come to mind. First, Rudy and I both grew up in the state of Arizona, and immigration has just been a huge issue here, especially in the last 10 years, since so many people have been crossing through the southern desert. Secondly, and more generally, illegal immigration is just incredibly politicized to the point that people who have different opinions about the issue really don't listen to others with different beliefs. And they've really, I think, forgotten the human story that's at the heart of this issue. So we thought that giving disposable cameras to these two groups on the ground would be a great way to remind people of the humanity.
Is that what the photographs reveal on the migrant side?
Yeah, I mean, I think the migrant photographs reveal an awful lot. So it's really cool, actually. A lot of the cameras we received back, you can see an entire migrant journey from start to finish. So it'll be a group of migrants that start off in Agua Prieta, and then they're walking across the New Mexico desert to enter the U.S. And they're like on the highway in Phoenix, and then they arrive at their final destination in Las Vegas or Oregon or California, wherever it may be.
And what did the Minutemen photographs reveal?
The Minutemen photographs, I think, were especially interesting as well, primarily because they're just a group that's really vilified and caricatured in the media, essentially, you know, portrayed as these gun-toting vigilantes. And in our experience with them and really looking at the photographs, you see that they have these very, well, they're people that have very legitimate gripes about this huge wave of immigrants that's coming into our country, you know, putting downward pressure on working class wages, you know, changing our culture and traditions and our languages, that sort of thing. And we thought it was really important to give them the opportunity to document their side of the story as well. I think the thing that was really, really striking about the project was that the Minutemen and the migrants obviously come from completely different backgrounds. You know, they speak different languages, have very different experiences. But at the end of the day, they share one common belief, that they're documenting something that shouldn't be happening, and that we need more comprehensive border reform.
Can you tell me about any of the specific images in either of the photographs, either from the Minutemen or from the migrants, that really kind of stood out to you and made you, you know, think about the issue, or something that was really profound that really stood out in those photographs?
Well, my current favorite set of migrant images are actually two rolls taken by two Mexican immigrants who I met in the Arizona-Sonora border town of Agua Prieta. And I met them a few days before Christmas last year, 2005. And they were planning on crossing on Christmas Eve because they figured that there wouldn't be as much Border Patrol out and that they would have higher chances of success. Their roles are incredible because they really took images of each other the whole way. So there's like about 50 pictures of each other.
I think one Minuteman image that stands out is a picture taken in Arizona, and it's a man's, I guess, upper body framed from the shoulders up, and he's wearing a cowboy hat and sunglasses, and he's against this bright blue, beautiful sky. And it's just, it's amazing. It looks like it was taken by a professional photographer. I can't believe he took that with the disposable camera. The way it's framed, the way the sky and the clouds bounces, the image of the sky and the clouds bounce off his sunglasses. It's just an incredible image. And I'm really just surprised at the quality of photos that came out of disposable cameras.
The exhibit, The Border Film Project, will start tomorrow, Saturday, September 16th, and run through January 28th of 2007 at the Scottsdale Museum of Contemporary Art. Rudy, Brett, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Stay tuned to Arizona Spotlight. When we continue, Bill Mortimer takes us inside the historic Old Pueblo Trolley. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. The recent voter-approved Regional Transportation Authority plan includes more than road construction and repair. Bill Mortimer takes a closer look.
There's something magical about them. Judy Garland sang about them, so I paid a visit to them. The trolley car. Well, more specifically, the Old Pueblo trolley. Trolley cars date back in Tucson to 1906. At least the electric ones do. Before that, they were horse or mule drawn. The Tucson trolleys ran until 1930, traveling from the railroad station, then west on Congress to Stone Avenue, turning north on Stone to 3rd Street. There they turned west on 3rd to the University main gate. We know 3rd Street now as University Boulevard. The trolleys as Old Pueblo Trolley came back in 1983. Dick Guthrie is the president and chief operating officer of the Old Pueblo Trolley. Dick, you said you have about 140 volunteers in different capacities for the trolley, and today we'll see four of them.
We'll have a dispatcher, which we have at all times, a motorman, and a conductor, and a trainee. And the trainee is a trained conductor and dispatcher, but is in training to become a motorman.
Tell me more about these volunteers.
We also have restoration personnel that work every Friday and every Saturday, and sometimes during the week. We have maintenance personnel that generally only work on Friday to maintain our vehicles. And then we have track construction personnel that work when we're building track, and the last time we did that was about a little less than a year ago. And then we have a significant number of volunteers who work on our overhead lines, which require special training. And so the largest number we have are the volunteers of Local 1116 of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Well, this takes quite a group of people to keep this line running.
Yes, it does. And those folks who work for Tucson Electric Power come out about four times a year, and we work on the overhead lines.
How many trolley cars are currently in use, Dick?
We have two cars running. The car that we're looking at here is a 1953 Japanese car that was built for operation in Kyoto, Japan. When they went to subways, it was sold to South Osaka and ran in South Osaka until the 9th of June, 1992. We purchased this car on Monday, the 12th of June, 1992, and had it shipped to Tucson the following November. Now, we have a second car that will also be running today, and that car was built in 1903 in Bruges, Belgium, for service in Brussels, Belgium.
Now, do you have any additional cars that are in restoration right now that are in process?
Yes, we do, Bill. We have a 1924 tram, that's the European, what the Europeans and the Australians and Japanese call their trolleys, a 1924 tram from Lisbon, Portugal.
The passage of the 20-year, $2 billion RTA plan includes $75 million for a modern streetcar system. Now, they say modern, Dick. What exactly does that entail?
Modern streetcar is a little bit longer than the car we're looking at that we run most days. The one they're talking about is running in two cities right now. Portland, Oregon has 8 of them running, and Tacoma, Washington has 3 running. These are slow speed cars that are strictly one car. They cannot run multiple cars. Slow speed, low floor. They are connector cars that run inside within a core of a city.
The RTA plan, as I understand it, calls for the route to be from the north end of the Health Science Center at the university through the center of downtown into Rio Nuevo to the west side of the Santa Cruz River. About 3 miles of line should be completed, they say, about the year 2011 or 2012. This will also allow SunTran to eliminate some of its routes. Right now, let's board this beautiful Belgium trolley and take a ride. One of our passengers today is David Small, a university student who has just returned from Japan, where he rode the trolleys in Hiroshima.
Did it appear to be like a tourist attraction, or was it really part of the transportation?
It was both. You know, there was a lot of normal people doing their everyday business, riding them. There were very toy shops everywhere, so you could get on and off wherever you wanted. And tourists also used it to go between the islands of Hiroshima.
Thank you, David. Our conductor today is Brittany Phillips.
You have to watch, make sure no one's half in, half out when the trolley starts. You run the bells on the other end of the trolley. So two bells is you're ready to go on that end, so he knows that everyone's in, the doors are closed, that kind of thing. If there's an emergency or something needs to stop, one bell, and then he knows that he needs to stop on his end. Pretty much just keeping an eye on everything, making sure everything is going okay.
Well, our ride has ended, so let's talk to the motorman who happens to be Brittany's father, Mark Phillips. Mark, you must be very proud of your daughter working with you.
Been a great experience, to have her with me and, right there with me, and she's taken her interest and her enjoyment and, put it towards, learning to be a conductor. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun doing it together.
Well, thank you, Mark. We felt very safe with you.
Well, thank you very much.
For a family outing, I highly recommend the Old Pueblo Trolleys. They run Friday evening, 6 until 10 p.m., Saturdays noon till midnight, and Sundays noon till 6 p.m. To learn more about the Old Pueblo Trolley and its exciting future, go online to oldpueblotrolley.org. At the Old Pueblo Trolley, I'm Bill Mortimer for Arizona Spotlight.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of Arizona Spotlight programs are available online at kuaz.org. Podcasts are also available. I'm Julie Burock.